Hawks fans, I flagged it last week. There's something about the club heading north to play the Suns that always has me feeling uneasy. And unfortunately, the Hawks turned in a downright dispirited performance that had Sammy scratching his head. Against our better judgment, it's time to unpack it right here on the Hawk Talk podcast. My name is Nick Mason, and tis, this was a tough watch.
Perhaps the first thing we should do, Nick, is look for winners out of Queensland, and I'd like to put up Jason Dunstall. can we talk about him for about... Oh, the rest of the pod. I feel that's a legitimate idea for tonight.
I mean, he does deserve his flowers, obviously, but we're going to have to talk about this game at some point, mate.
All right. Well, Hawthorn have played Geelong, then they've played Collingwood, 6 day breaks, and then another 6 day break into Gold Coast. They've been interstate for two rounds in a row. They're a very young team, one of the youngest we've filled for many years. What other excuses do we have?
I'm not sure there is an excuse. When no Hawk has over four tackles and a second gamer for the Suns, Will Graham, has 14. How could I defend that?
Well, yeah, well, John Newcomb, he did a similar thing, didn't he? But I'm just telling you, I felt this was probably the game we were going to have against Collingwood. And for it to come the next week, I wasn't entirely surprised. What did shock me was the way that Sam Mitchell behaved in the presser and a couple of the things that have come out of interviews after the match. It speaks to a disunity between the leadership of the club and the coaches and their focus. I'm not sure their focus is exact enough. I'm not sure the standards by what some of the things that Moore said, whether they're being maintained well enough. Certainly, this isn't a performance that you can say is anywhere near progress, right? Then they've done nothing. It's just a wasted game. So what do you do with that? Hawthorn is terrible up on the Gold Coast generally. We've taken much better sides up there and got beaten by more. But what you're telling me is the attitude that the players or the sort of way they rolled over quite early in the contest, that's the problem, is it? The lack of intensity.
Well, it was especially troubling. I mean, for a multitude of reasons. First of all, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my day where I sat down to stream Box Hill versus the Gold Coast Suns. And they got absolutely walloped in the first quarter. And you could just tell from the opening minutes. You know, you just get a sense of the game as a fan. And you're just like, oh, it's not their day. They're not on. This is not going to go well for them. And that's exactly how it unfolded. My sense of that, my intuition about that game was 100% correct. And I thought, well, I know how I feel about Hawthorn, the AFL side taking on Gold Coast. And I think we're in for a similar story. And I was disappointed to find, yep, of course, it played to script perfectly. That's what we produce. But the other thing that I want to mention is you bring up Dylan Moore. This idea that there's no more sitting out of drills at training, I should hope so. I don't know. I found that comment quite bewildering. You're professional footballers. There are standards that need to be maintained, and I would argue more so for a club that is struggling to get off the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, that was concerning, but it was also concerning how Mitchell handled that presser. I don't want to see the emotional side of the coach in the presser. I want to see the analytic. Unless it's a very close defeat or, you know, you're euphoric for something, I want to see, especially in times like this, you've got to be reasoned, you've got to be calculated. You cannot be dropping your head and looking as frustrated and almost bewildered is how I would term Sam Mitchell in that presser. He inspired pity, to be honest, for me.
Well, I mean, tactically, he clearly was bewildered. So you didn't need a depressed conference, as I would call it, to tell me that he was completely out of his depth on this particular occasion. And you know what? I don't mind a bit of emotion. I want to see that he cares. I want to see him reflect how I'm feeling as a fan, going, what the hell was that? That is not acceptable. That is not good enough. And we need to turn this around fast. Because, frankly, the way that you're recommending that he behave in that press conference, I've had that. I've had that for the past 4 weeks. I don't need any more of that. I want to see him start to care and pledge that things are going to be different. This, ironically, I know you feel differently, that inspires much more hope in me that a coach can sit there after the game and go, that was putrid.
He was furious, but he didn't express his fury. And he was on the bench all night. And he didn't get any change in the behaviour of the players.
Yeah, I think of all the stuff that's been put under the microscope from the wider footy media, I think that idea about him being on the bench and changing up his approach personally, that rather than being in the box, he's on the sidelines, just what that yielded, I think you're right. We can't really be certain of that. I don't think that did anything.
All right, so in such a poor performance, we look for guys that never say die, right? They just battled all day. And you'd have to say that James Warple battled all day, even if he only got 14 touches, because his pressure points were almost the highest on the field.
Yep, true.
He maintains a form line, even though the team was deplorable in their efforts. Then Amon seems to be getting into a role. Even if, look, it's hard to say because the chains just weren't there. He might get a lot of kicks, but they weren't going anywhere. It wasn't creating anything.
Yeah, that's right. 26 touches in all, but I mean, I'm glad that he was involved in what was a milestone game for him. I think it was 150 games he notched up, but I'm glad that he had some sort of involvement. But yeah, the impact is questionable. I think we saw a few odd manoeuvres. I think Sicily actually spent more time forward. For what purpose? I accepted it when it was break glass in case of emergency to try and win the game against Collingwood, but he spent a lot more time there this week, and I just thought, well, that's clutching at straws. I don't know what you're trying to do there.
Well, I gave that a big tick, actually, because I feel like Sicily's been umpired out of the game. I think he's gun-shy. I think he's second-guessing himself after what happened with Essendon. I think he realises that he's the best player out there and he needs to keep his head. He's under pressure from that. And, yeah, he's just the umpire's never given him the benefit of the doubt. So the only place that you can flip the script on the umpires and let Sicily start attacking the ball and expecting a free kick in his favour is to send him forward. I think they're trying to release the pressure on Sicily by sending him forward. And the fact that the forward line was not working at all.
No, the forward line was bereft of any sort of spirit or any path to goal, really. But you know, to your point, if you're going to take your All-Australian defender out of the back line to get involved somehow, are you going to plug that gap with anything? Are you going to plug that hole, or what's going to happen there?
Well, look, that's a selection issue, really. But, and I feel that selection is just going to be terribly difficult this week against the Roos, who are, you know, we're still favourites going into that match, which is odd to me.
Oh, we should not be. In no way. No, we have no business being favourites for that game.
They're awful too. North, let's not beat around the bush. North are dreadful.
Well, it's 17th versus 18th, yes.
So we have a good chance. Like, I'm not saying don't go to the game, we're going to get slaughtered. But I'm saying it's not going to be a high-quality spectacle, and both teams will be in an arm wrestle for most of the game.
Well, I'm at pains to be pessimistic here, like on this podcast. I know that's what a vast majority of our listeners don't really want from us. I'm aware of that, but it's hard not to be dispirited and disillusioned after this performance. I found myself wondering throughout this game, and indeed afterwards, what can you hang your hat on as a Hawthorn supporter? And I would say James Warple is probably up there. Beyond that, I start scratching my head at this point. The 2024 Hawks, there's just, we're bereft of things to rely on.
They just weren't doing keeping your head over the ball, going in harder than your opponent. There wasn't that moral aptitude to the contest. They weren't accepting to contest at points. And that is the most difficult thing to watch. I did enjoy Finn McGuinness. He is all heart, kicking 3 goals, 1, 5 scoring involvements. Only didn't Dylan Moore had more with 6. You know, Chol, he had so many opportunities and he just couldn't take them over. Well, you know, Mac Andrew, I mean, I know they were roommates or whatever, but geez, I would have thought he'd definitely beat him. Mac Andrew looked magnificent. He looked like a veteran against him. He didn't even seem to like, have the emotional anger at being beaten by one of his best mates, which is integral to most of us. You know, it's just the competitive will of the fella would look. There was only one bloke who outdid himself, you know, for what he's usually output in a game, and that was Finn McGuinness with 16 touches. Everyone else was well below what is their standard.
Well, our midfield got nowhere near it. They were just absolutely monstered. And look, in the time of this podcast, we've seen some shocking midfield performances that are not of this era, but this one is as bad as I've seen in many years, I would say. This is not just, oh, they were terrible and inept and they couldn't dispose of the footy properly and their efficiency sucked. It's not like that. It's just they weren't even in the contest. They weren't a factor. One guy that I do want to highlight is I'm quite enjoying the year of Jack Scrimshaw. I'll say that much. I think he is really making good on his commitment to turn in a better season. He is a guy that keeps on trying, and boy, is he important.
Well, yeah, he is, but they haven't got the back structure. We haven't got the forward structure. Anyway, we can go into all the things we don't have, but it's so hard to see what we do have at the moment, and the media being quite ridiculous in how they're speaking about us, don't you think?
Well, I do think, and I couldn't help but see the graphic from Footy Classified that had all of our young guns in the crosshairs, and it makes you think, look, guys, what are we doing here? Because we've got Josh Ward and Cameron McKenzie, who are both 20 years old, just as examples.
All under 50 games.
Yeah, exactly. And they're on this graphic, they're on this list, as if to say, Hawthorn have made some huge errors here. It's like, you don't know that. It's too early to say. I understand being underwhelmed by this performance and underwhelmed by the season that's unfolded so far. But this is where it's at. This is this year. And also on that list is the likes of Nick Watson. He's been at the club, you know, 6 months. Like, less than.
Yeah, he's got 3 games under his belt, right?
Yeah, and the inference is, oh, well, that hasn't worked, Hawthorn. It's like, oh, lay off. Like, do we not know moderation in the footy media? We can be disappointed, but we don't have to annihilate the club, you know?
Yeah, well, there were some good articles that pointed out how shortchanged we'd been by the academies, what we could have had if our picks had remained where they ought to have been. And then the other part was, I think Jonathan Brown came out and said, well, the Tasmanian football side will be closer to a premiership than Hawthorn right now. And there was a lot of pushback against that, but I tell you what, given the concessions they're likely to have and the fact that we have a small window in which to replenish our talent on this list, and don't forget we've already culled a lot, we've really pruned back, and we've been savage for doing so, it is true. I think that's absolutely true. We have to get in the most talent we can as soon as possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a club rebuilding in, say, 2 or 3 years from now. The change for us has to happen now.
Because you won't get access. Yeah, you won't have access. And I found that pushback to be quite strange.
I'm surprised of all the footy media coverage, you haven't mentioned the one thing that I was certain you were going to bring up. And that is David King suggesting that we trade Mitch Lewis. I thought for sure you would level that at me.
Well, that's next on the rundown. I was sort of auguring to it with how we'd been savaged in the media for trading out experience. And now they want us to get rid of Lewis. But, Nick, he's not in the side.
I know.
He's not in the side a lot. So I'm not sure that it's not a great suggestion.
No, I know. I can see why it comes up, but, oh, dear. I mean, as always, it depends what you're getting back through the door. But he's one of our most important players. To just permanently not have Lewis on the list anymore, that's what you're talking about. It's just he's gone from the club. At least sometimes he plays at the moment, and when he does, he has value to the side. I would say quite significant value to the side. I would think seriously hard about the idea of trading. It's the equivalent, to my mind, it's the equivalent of, oh, okay, well, Sicily has capital, let's trade him. Newcomb has capital, let's think about getting rid of him. It's the same conversation. I think it's Too far. I think it's way too far.
Everyone has a price. What would you take for Mitch Lewis? First rounder?
Another key forward? How about that? Because that's our list profile. We seriously... To lose Lewis would mean we have to replenish that positionally instantly.
We're trying to do that now because he doesn't play enough.
Well, I understand that.
So if someone offered me pick 15 or less, I'd probably take it.
Yeah, I must admit I would have a look at that too, because after all, as much as he does have value, it's a big prize for us where we sit at the moment.
To be honest, seeing the way we kicked to him, I think he'd be wrapped.
You might be right. Oh, dear. It's all a little bit bleak at the moment.
Bloody Cozzy, he's not doing bloody any good at Richmond, though.
No.
That's our development, mate. That's our development. Amon, D'Ambrosio, Weddle, Sicily, McGuinness, Meek, Warple, Ginnivan, Impey. Only half of those have we developed. And they're our top scorers on the weekend. And I felt for Sammy Butler, who looks like a fish out of water, totally. I mean, he stepped up in the last quarter, but... Oh, we've got to make sure he gets a kick. Someone in the past, you know, you'd have an experienced head out there, make sure that Sam Butler got a touch early, got some confidence.
Well, my question for you is whether he gets a run this week. Does he stay in the side? I think he might. I don't know if he deserves to, but I think he might.
Well, it becomes very difficult. Like, even Reeves is under concussion protocol now.
Well, let's have a look at our injury list, because that was just released shortly before recording. We've got CJ, who's going to come back through the VFL, so that's something. He's going to be taking on North Melbourne on Saturday afternoon, 2:05 p.m. at City Oval. Lewis, as we mentioned, he's a test. I imagine they don't rush him back this week, but this club needs to defibrillate their woes, their season, and get things back on track.
Defibrillate?
Well, it's about revival. They need to get something started here. They need signs of life, and that's what a defibrillator does. Luke Bruce is now another 2 weeks away. He's recovering from a groin injury, a groin complaint that seems to be more significant than was first reported. Will Day is 1 week away. Thank God for that. This midfield needs something. Stat. Chad Wingard, 2 weeks away. The rest of the stuff on the injury list here is not really new, apart from Reeves in concussion protocols for a week. Bennett's is in concussion protocol, thought to be out for 2 weeks. The rest, DGB, 4 to 5 weeks away. Will McCabe is 8 to 10, and Blank, as we know, is out for the season with his ACL.
If we don't get a win this week, right, and you're not confident...
Well, I put it back on you, mate. Why should I be confident?
Well, because of the odds. But I've just noticed that we're drifting heavily.
That's well, funny that. There's so much conjecture and negative noise around the club. I would expect that we do drift.
But after this, it's looking like round 12, where we may have an opportunity at the MCG against Adelaide, or round 14 when we play Richmond at the MCG late on a Saturday afternoon. After that, round 16 against the West Coast Eagles. I mean, this is pretty dire. And I've got to say, it's over the top for me to be doing this, because we played so well against Collingwood in that second half. We got everything out of ourselves. And I think that this is just the hangover from that. I really do. I think it's an overreaction to jump off everyone. And I think... that Sam was overreacting in that presser, and I didn't enjoy that from him. And I don't need that kind of anger. I don't need to see that in the coach. I know that Sam's an angry man that demands standards. I don't think he can hide that well. I think he needs to – maybe he's on the bench too long. I don't know. But he needs to be looking at the coaches. And I think there's some severe questions that need to be asked of the coaching line coaches about just what they're trying to do in that midfield, because nothing has kicked this year.
No, we've fallen in a heap, in a huge way. What was very promising in 2023 in the midfield, we've seen barely any of that in 2024. I think let's start with the basics. You know, when the ball is bounced for the first time, it's the first quarter of the match. Where are your heads at? Are you in the game? What's happening? Because there's no evidence of that. For the first five rounds of the year, it's difficult to see that we're in the contest.
Just got to get that aggro that Mitchell shows into feats of strength and aggression at the ball out on the field. Get those negative emotions and create opportunities for yourself with it.
Has this been cathartic for you? It's been vaguely cathartic for me.
Nah, not at all. Like, I know it's round five. I know we're going into round six. You're never going to see development from a team with this profile in the first 5 weeks. You're going to see it after the bye, round 14, 15. We'll probably beat West Coast and Richmond or start feeling good about ourselves. But North are a good test. And I hope we do play one-on-one. I really do. I hope we play one-on-one.
Well, I don't want us to do a slack zone that doesn't work. I'm hugely critical of that defensive setup. I don't think we're nearly as intense enough in our zone press. I just don't think it works for us.
How are you going to combat Larky?
Well, see, at around this point of the season, I would have hoped with losing Blank that we might have start to have seen Phillips in the lineup, but he missed for Box Hill. On the tip of my tongue what the complaint is there. I want to say it was a knee niggle. I'm not really sure. I'll have to look that one up.
He's not on the injury list.
No, he's not on the injury list, but he missed for Box Hill. He didn't play against the Suns.
Must be fine. Otherwise, they'd ride him down. Also, another bloke, Cooper Stevens. If our midfield's going that badly, right, and I'm trying not to drop some bombs here, but how on earth is he still listed if he can't get into that midfield now?
It's a fair point. It is a fair point you make.
And they should have elevated Callum Brown or just ridiculous. Harry Morrison running around the twos while they're putting on that at the AFL, that's ridiculous again. You can't. There's a lot of questions. A lot of questions. And I love Bodie Ryan, and I think he'll be great. And I think Jai Sarong could be very good as well. But we need to see him.
I agree with you on both of those guys.
It's probably too early to bring these guys in, but those in the lineup aren't doing anything to keep them out. That's my point.
Oh, I agree. And I admit that the way I talk about it is I'm on the precipice of being one of those fans. It's like, play Box Hill, get all of them out and bring in Box Hill. I don't want to be one of those people, but I agree with what you're saying. The guys that are currently holding down spots are barely doing so. Like, if you continue this form up, and I'm aware we're only at round five, but if this trajectory continues, then why aren't we seeing some of these guys? Sarong does deserve more of a chance based on the form of the senior guys, the guys who regularly make the side.
Now, you watched that VFL game, didn't you? What happened with Bailey McDonald? Was he unsighted for a lot of the game, or he seemed to have very few touches?
Yeah, I think they locked him down pretty well, and I think he very much dropped his head after he got absolutely ambushed holding the ball. He got caught cold. He just didn't see. He had no awareness of the guy sneaking up behind him, and it was going to be an inside 50 for sure, and it would have really helped at the time, but no, he got struck down, and I didn't see or notice him much after that.
Bloody Callum Porter had 15 tackles in that loss.
Well, this is where it becomes difficult, because over the years that we've been doing this podcast, there have been times where Box Hill give you plenty to get excited about, and it makes you wonder, could do with a few of those guys in the Hawks. That'd be nice.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's industry, that's effort, and that's not present in our AFL side at the moment.
Well, that is the one thing, I made a point of flagging it from the top. That's the one thing I'm the least likely to forgive, is that if you don't have the ball, you can still try. You can still have pressure points, and you highlight James Warple's ability to bring that. I appreciate that, because that means that's the will to win against, all the flow of momentum and against the odds, the will to win is still there if you're putting on pressure. And I admire that. And I don't think our players are bringing that at the moment. Although, having said that, they did for Collingwood. It comes back to what you can depend on.
Do you agree with the hangover theory? Do you agree with the hangover theory? Does that carry any weight? Collingwood had the highest pressure game of 2024 against us.
Yeah, I suppose when you put it in that sort of lens, I suppose it makes sense, but it just feeds into this broader frustration that I have with this season with Hawthorn, that I'm sure I'm sure Sam Mitchell feels it. How do I get the best out of these guys? I see it every now and again. You know, I see it when they try and climb off the canvas against Collingwood. I see it against Geelong. You know, after a horrible first quarter, all of a sudden by halftime, they're a really good shot. And then they're not again. He must be racking his brains. And I think that's where the anger and the frustration sort of simmered over a bit and boiled over. It is that question of how do I capture this on a more consistent basis? But then there's the other part of me that wonders, is that possible for a young list? Am I asking too much? Is Mitchell asking too much? I don't know.
Can we talk about Jason Hadfield Dunstall now? Can we move on?
Yeah, if you want. What do you want to say? What hasn't been said at this point?
Well, I haven't had much to say. Let's see. He is Wayne Carey's best player he's ever played against.
Did they play on each other, did they?
No, they didn't. No. But, look, just as a young boy going to watch the footy, and generally most of the footy I watched was after 91, it was amazing to see Dunstall performing as well as he did. And I saw a couple of knee injuries, as a matter of fact, which was bloody awful, especially the one with Silvani. And he made the football club for me, having Dunstall there. He could do so many things. He could crumb, he could kick off both feet. He was tall, he was strong, he had timing, he was a leader, he didn't over-celebrate. He got the best from those around him. He'd share it around. He'd share the celebrations. He was a colossus of a figure for the Hawthorn Footy Club. And then what he goes on to do in the back rooms is legendary as well in the lead up to 2008 and again in the three-peat, you know?
He is a quality operator, and something that I've always held in high regard about Dunstall is this humble magnificence about him. There's no showboating about him. He's not a larger-than-life personality. I think he plays it up on the bounce and stuff like that, but you can see in his playing days, he's extremely humble and just brilliant all the while. And I'm a bit younger than you, so, you know, I was too young to really appreciate him at his prime. I got the tail end of his career. But I remember always as a young kid, my dad talking him up and talking about Dunstall to me, and just this portrayal of Dunstall is this invulnerable raging bull on the lead. You know, just this sense of if Dunstall's on for a chest mark, there ain't no stopping that. He is taking it, he is going back, and he is slotting the goal. And by the time I was of a decent age to begin appreciating him and the tail end of his career, I could see that that was true. Even towards the end of his career, that was true, and that was something marvellous.
And the other thing was, he wasn't a locket that would, you know, kill the bloke who dropped into the hole. He would hit him, but he wouldn't hit them above the shoulders or something like that. He had very good self-control.
I'm not sure where I read this online today, but this idea of Dunstall actually being one of the most underrated footballers of all time. And I thought to myself, that's a weird stance to take. But then again, maybe there's merit to it. I don't know.
When I saw him, when the club was in turmoil financially and stuff like that, and we couldn't bring in huge names into that forward line, you got to remember when he started, the forward line around him, like, you're not going to one-up Dermy in terms of seeking the eyes of the crowd. You're just not going to do that. So, and then he's got Buchanan next to him, and he's always had brilliant fellows kicking to him on the lead, especially Pritchard and all the other half forwards, even Gowers. You know, it's fantastic ability to thank Jarman after he'd slotted the goal from 50 for the pass that was perfect. You know, it was ingrained to him that it was a team game. And he was brutal at times, and that was fantastic as well. He would also chase. Like, you think of a key forward today that chases as well as Dunstall did. You just don't see that. And Dunstall weighed a lot more than most of these guys.
Some of the vision of him is just, he's deceptively agile.
Yeah. Oh, the way he could take a mark and roll and then stand up to take the kick. just incredible. Like, you got to, I met him once, I think, at a football training camp, and he was just teaching us how to roll. And I thought, well, I don't really want to learn how to roll. I want the kicking technique or whatever. But he's like, no, you have to learn how to roll because then you don't have the fear of diving for the mark. You don't have the fear of it. You got to get, it was all about getting past the fear of hitting the ball at speed or whatever. You knew that your body and you could handle whatever was coming. And as long as you did it enough in training, it wouldn't be a problem to execute it during the game.
Well, he's a smart man, is JD, and that's probably the reason why I've appreciated his media career. I think he's a notch above in terms of his analysis and the way in which he presents it. I've had to think to myself over the years, I'm like, it's just my Hawthorn bias showing through why I like him better than most of the other people on Fox Footy. But I do genuinely think he's a great media performer. And whenever he talks, I listen to what he has to say.
Yeah, you love the bounce, don't you?
With the exception of the bounce. The bounce is a weird one because I know what they're trying to do. I just don't think it lands for me.
I like the larrikinism of it. But when you get Dunstall doing special comments during the game, God, it's a relief, isn't it?
It is.
Like, he doesn't say anything that you've already noticed. He doesn't relate anything you've already seen. He shows you something new. And Dermy's very much like that as well. But he does linger on a point, whereas Dunstall will say it once and that'll be enough for him.
It's so true. And even with Dermy, whether it's Channel 7 or Fox or even in the radio world, I feel like as I go from person to person and I go, what about this guy? What about this guy? I feel like I could hear people mount arguments to say, they're annoying and I hate them. I would be happy to never hear from them again. And that's even the case with Dermy. I understand he can be convoluted. I can be quite convoluted myself. I get it. But with Dunstall, I can't even fathom it. This idea that a footy fan could not appreciate his analysis or be sick of him in some measure. I can't mount a case for that.
I think one of my favourites is Eddie Betts kicking a goal from the boundary. I'm not sure which one it was, but it's just Dunstall going, oh, no, you know, as in you just shouldn't be able to do that. And it's a pure reaction from him over the top of the commentator, but it really, that makes that goal, I think.
I would have loved it if the induction into legend status was actually conditional and what they needed him to do was dribble a goal home from about 45. Go on, JD, just dribble it home. Just what's the problem? Just dribble it home.
I was there on the day of the 17. That was a great day. When you used to go to either end just to watch Dunstall kick goals, and if you were really thumping a team, you'd be able to sit there and wonder if JD could just outscore them himself. it was always great fun.
Well, mate, speaking of that, it just reminds me of Lance Franklin outscoring North Melbourne down at UTAS.
Beautiful segue, Nick.
That brings us back to, when is it? It's 4 p.m. Sunday, isn't it? Which is annoying because I can't attend.
But it's annoying anyway, whether you can't attend or not, 4 p.m. on a Sunday.
I suppose so, but I had a comedy show to go to in the evening, and then they rescheduled it right smack bang in the middle of the match. So now there's a clash. I don't want to do my dough, so I'm going to the comedy festival show. And I don't know, I'm torn about that because if we win, it might be the only win we have for a little while. If we lose, obviously that's going to be devastating as well. I don't know. I think in all circumstances, I prefer to attend the footy.
I'll tell you something. We're not losing.
Okay. I trust you.
It won't be a loss this week. It might be a very slender win, but I would say that it's probably about 20 points in the end, and I'll back him in.
Alrighty, fair enough. Are you making any significant changes? I'm not sure we have too many levers to pull. I'm wondering.
We don't have any levers to pull. And they've got to be judicious during the week because although they're going to be doing stuff with their mouthguards out, we can't really have any more injuries given the ones we had in the preseason. And we can't afford to, raise the workload on some of these young boys, because they won't perform on the Sunday either.
I did notice those comments from Mitchell where, like, oh, you know, if we have to if we have to cop a corky or two, if some players are unavailable, so be it. And I thought to myself, who? Who's left if that happens?
Well, I mean, just looking at some of the performances, guys are either really feeling it or they're injured. And I'm looking at, well, I don't know. It'll sound like sour grapes or me giving them excuses, but McKenzie, Ward, Nash, they're just so far down. Even Newcomb, he has to be carrying something. I don't understand it.
I suppose that feeds into the bewildering feeling about there's all these guys that were such shining lights in 2023, and they've almost all of them at the same time taken a backward step. And that's hard to take. But, mate, I'm going to trust you anyway. I'm going to hope that we get the job done against North, because you know how I feel about North Melbourne. But more than that, Hawthorn needs this desperately.
Yeah, do we? I mean, we're going to have... Yeah, it might be really good for these young fellas to get the pressure right on them. If Mitchell is thinking that they're just turning up for a paycheck and that they're not looking to be successful, you might see some very, very aggressive selection issues this week.
Yeah, well, it's already pretty desperate at the selection table, because we just don't have many moves to make at the moment. We have so much talent on the sidelines that our flexibility is severely reduced. But anyway, I'll hope that we get the W, because I believe in the W. I believe in the confidence that it can build, and I think that's more useful at the moment. I think there needs to be a circuit breaker ASAP. Anyway, it means a lot to us when people take the time to tell us and tell the world how much they enjoy our show. You can do so via Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating, write a review, whatever you fancy. The kind words are always appreciated. Meanwhile, we'd also love for you to join us over on our social channels. You can find us on X, where we've officially surpassed 5,000 followers. Tiers. That is a massive milestone.
That is beautiful. And I want to say that I'm going to be very loud on Sunday. Exceptionally loud.
There you go. You'll make up for the lack of North supporters there.
surely they're going to go, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd have to turn out. I think they've shown decent enough signs this year. It's just maybe it's the same issue as us, where they're able to put it together in a dependable fashion. Anyway, jump on board on X if you haven't already. That's where it's at. Meanwhile, our Facebook family is growing all the time. Plenty of fun banter to be had there. And of course, we're on Instagram, so you can find us there too. And here's the big one, Patreon. Patreon.com/HawkTalkPod. That's where you can fling us a few bucks and support our show. It helps us put time into the podcast each and every week. And we really appreciate all the support of our proud, passionate, and paid-up Patreon subscribers. Patreon.com/HawkTalkPod.
Well, that's a bit of a short, sweet pod, Nick, with a whole lot of positive things to say about the club. And
we didn't even touch on the idea of the reconciliation attempts possibly falling flat, but that's a watch this space. And I don't think we'll discuss it today. We've had a little bit of, well, I think it's cathartic, but I don't know how it's been received. Maybe I put a disclaimer at the top just to warn people that this might be a bit of a bleak listen.
Well, I mean, it's all about what happens this weekend. And I'm prepared to give them that poor performance after that wonderful performance in the second half against Collingwood. I know it's not sustained for the whole game, but I'm quite patient. I've decided I have to be patient with this list. I can definitely beat North Melbourne, and they should.
18th versus 17th. It is a schlockbuster. I'm sad that I can't be there. I would absolutely be cheering on the boys if I could, especially in this hour of desperation. They need a circuit breaker. I hope we can get it done against the Roos. This has been the Hawk Talk Podcast. We'll be back next week, win, lose, or draw. Hope it's that dub. We are a happy team at Hawthorn.